Welcome to the InnovaBus podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast. Welcome to today's episode of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we're joined by Robert Brill, a leading light in digital advertising and the creative force behind Brill Media. Robert's insights are like a skilled cartographer's map, offering you clear routes through the complex terrain of digital marketing. His guidance will chart a course that not only clarifies, but also invigorates, leaving you more strategic and driven. Tune in to navigate the intricate pathways of this field with confidence and discover new horizons for your business and for your personal growth. Hi, I'm your host Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited today to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast all the way from Los Angeles in the USA, Robert Brill, who's the co-founder and owner of Brill Media. And Brill Media is a digital advertising agency that helps businesses scale and grow. So welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Robert. It's a real privilege to have you here as my guest.
Jürgen, thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
So I'm really excited to dig into all things media today, and your kind of bread and butter is advertising, and there's lots we can touch on there, advertising, marketing, and a lot of things that have been changing in that space, of course, over the last 5 years, probably over the last 5 months in particular. So I'm looking forward to digging into all of that. Now, before we do that, what's the impact you're hoping to make in the world, Robert?
I want business owners to achieve the freedom that I've achieved and to have the ability to live life on their terms. I mean, a big part of me starting this business was I didn't want to have to ask a boss for time off so I can go on vacation, because I always felt very anxious about that. Because, you know, I had money. I was like, I want to see the world. I want to be, you know, out of the office for like 2 or 3 weeks and I don't have to worry about my job. But that could just be a lot of internal anxiety, not to say, you know, that those people were bad people or mean people. It's just probably more of a me thing than anything. And I really wanted to create this world where I do the work I love to do, and I do it the way I want to do it, the way I think is best. And I want business owners and entrepreneurs and anyone who has the dream or a vision of growing a company, I want them to have the necessary tools and coaching to be able to make this possible.
That's fantastic. Yeah, and this whole concept of freedom, I had to laugh a little bit when you said maybe it's just me that is anxious about asking for vacation or so on. But I think that's in all of us, isn't it? Because we're once we get to the point of, okay, we're ambitious, we want to do a good job, and walking away in some sense, it's sort of like walking away to take vacation, right. Does create that level of anxiety. I wonder, like when you first started the business, because a lot of people fall into this trap, and I did too when I started, was that all of a sudden you've got the most demanding boss you've ever had yourself.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
How did you make that transition?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the best way that I can say it is that I have a really good partner in my wife. It's my business, but she's sort of like the silent partner. She helps me do good advice, she gives me good advice. She helps me make really good decisions. And I'm very confident that the success we're having wouldn't be possible without her. With regard to the transition from an entrepreneur, from an employee to an entrepreneur, it was scary because for a year or two prior to going out on my own, I was thinking about, you know, how I could do this and what I would do and do I really want to do it? And, you know, it felt safe and less risky to stay employed and whatnot. So eventually I started my business and life punched me in the face. I realized I don't know how to sell. I don't know how to talk to people in a way that where money rains down upon me. And so as a result, I also didn't know how to, there were big financial investments we needed to make in the business. Like if we wanted to run a $100,000 ad campaign, the nature of the business is you get paid 30, 60, 90 days later. So I didn't have $100,000 to float. And I was like, oh my gosh, what if they don't pay me? Then, you know, that would be horrible. And, you know, just all these things. So I think my journey is that it's the entrepreneurial journey for me started in, it was a fits and starts type of situation. It took me a year or two to just will myself to think that this is even possible. I started the business and then I took a full-time job after that because it was overwhelming. But I knew, so Napoleon Hill has this phrase, burning desire. So I knew I really had to go all in on this. I felt like I missed something by not doing this. And so I had to go all in, and I did. And I think there are a lot of mistakes along the way. And one of the first things I learned is that mindset is critical to success. Carol Dweck has coined the phrase mindset like in the 60s or 70s. And she talks about growth mindset, the idea that you learn from your mistakes, you can be better tomorrow than you are today, and that the world is malleable to you. And I really had to learn that because a lot of my life I had this fixed mindset of like, I know my limitations, I know what I can and cannot do. And I realized over the years that, you know, going into becoming an entrepreneur was an incredibly risky endeavor that could only yield success if every failure was learned from and used to become a jumping off point for even better things down the road.
Yeah. I think that's a really big one, isn't it? I mean, once people start that entrepreneurial journey, they're already taking on board some risk and embracing risk, and to then look at risk as something to be embraced. I mean, you need to take sensible risk, obviously, but at the same time, if it goes belly up, the initiatives that you take, what do you learn from that? What do you take out of that? How do you do it different or better next time? Yeah.
And risk and failure happens every day. I mean, you know, I think it's something as mundane. It's risky to take a different route, because you may turn into a massive traffic jam and you'll be late. Everything is risk. And I think the more individuals can embrace like a slightly elevated level of risk, there is real big opportunity, real big upside on the other side of that risk. And I think, you know, one of the key motivators for me, and I think this is about a lot of entrepreneurs, is I really wanted to expand my level of responsibility. I wanted to rise to the magnitude of that responsibility. So I gave myself bigger responsibilities, and sometimes I achieved success in meeting the responsibility, and sometimes I didn't, and I learned from those things. But I didn't think I'd ever be able to have this magnitude of responsibility had I stayed as an employee.
Yeah, and of course you don't have as much control over your career trajectory in that sense, and certainly in some of the big corporates. I know I experienced this for a long time, was that I know I'm capable of a lot more, I know I'm achieving good results, and yet nothing's happening. I'm stuck in the same job,
right?
Which, yeah, which if you're an entrepreneur, you have a lot of control over that, over your personal growth, if you're willing to embrace that risk.
100%. All the successes are a result of your team, and all the failures are a result of you.
Yeah.
But I think, there was a moment in time where I realized I have a vision for how I want to do things, and I didn't want to wait to try to convince other people to do things with my vision. And so I just was like, I'm going to do it on my own. And so far it's been a good journey.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Well, you've had a front row seat to the changes in the advertising industry as you've sort of embarked on that journey, and especially the shift towards digital. I guess you kind of saw that, and in some ways that's still happening now, although it's probably a long way towards the bottom end of the bell curve at the right-hand side. How have you seen that landscape evolve, and what do you think's been the biggest game changer today in that space?
I mean, I think the biggest game changer overall is the introduction of the iPhone. I think the iPhone allowed us to communicate in ways that simply weren't possible before. It then cultivated the creation of businesses like Uber and Lyft and Airbnb, where we can interact with people and go into places where otherwise would have been forbidden, you know, getting into a stranger's car. I think Meta is a real power for good in the business environment that it's existed in for the last 10 or 20 years, right? Like a lot, like there's 10 million small businesses in the United States, or 10 million businesses. Most of them are small businesses in the United States that rely on Meta for the growth of their business. And the simple accessibility is really important for businesses to be able to connect to their audiences in meaningful ways. But I think ultimately that the challenge for us is that for all businesses is that there's not enough experts available to guide those investments, right? There's a lot of tools, there's a lot of opportunity, there's LinkedIn and TikTok and Google and Hulu, et cetera. And those are all innovative platforms by themselves. There's not enough people who can really steward or shepherd those relationships so that the advertising investment is actually meaningful and done correctly for the business. So I think iPhones are meaningful. I think Meta is meaningful.
Yeah, I think you raised a really good point there. And one of the things that, as you were explaining that, I recall the very early days of running Facebook ads on what's now Meta. And I don't know, you could pay 25 cents or something per click, or even less than that. It might have been 25 cents a day or 25 cents a week. It was very cheap to run ads. And so people would run ads, and it didn't really matter whether they were well-constructed, whether they were well-targeted, whether they had a clear call to action, because the competition was so low and the price, the investment was so low as well, there'd be some level of results out of it, usually actually pretty good. I remember doing some stuff in the early days, and if I look back on those, I think, boy, they were pretty ordinary advertising and so on. But I did get some results out of it because there wasn't big competition and it didn't cost me a lot of money. Even if I didn't get results, I'd say, okay, that was worth trying out. These days, it's very different, isn't it? The competition is huge. The cost to advertise can be quite high because it's very competitive. So it's a really important point to kind of engage with some experts that understand how the space works.
Businesses need partners. Just like, you know, if your car breaks down, you could try to fix it, but you could probably get a better job done with a mechanic. You hand me a hammer, I'm a, and a, and a, and and a car that's broken, I'm just going to break it further, right? You go to the doctor because you're not feeling well. You go to a lawyer for legal stuff, plumber for your drains and all that stuff. And the point here is that there's so many B2B companies that are expecting other companies to buy their expertise and their service level. And so many of those B2B companies also won't pay experts in marketing and advertising and other things to accelerate their own growth. So, you know, I think, you know, one of the core values of our business is we eat our own dog food. We do what we tell other companies to do. So we run advertising campaigns. We have a sales process. We deploy CRMs and we pay experts. So like we don't do search engine optimization, for example. We run ads on Google, PPC ads, but we don't do SEO. So I paid an SEO expert like a few thousand dollars and he gave me a year and a half worth of work to do. Now I understand how to do SEO. And the key point of that is I had spent 5 years trying to figure out SEO for my business to varying levels of success, mostly not so much success. But then in a few phone calls, I learned far more than I ever learned it over the course of 5 years of SEO. So, you know, paying for an expert is something that we do. And I think also it's important for businesses to understand the type of business that they're in the idea that like you really want to focus in on one or two or three core domains of expertise. You don't want to expand too far out of that. And chances are, if you're a B2B manufacturing business, chances are your core level, your core expertise is not going to be in marketing and advertising. That's perfectly fine. No one expects every mom and pop business or even any mid-sized B2B company to really understand the intricacies of advertising unless you spend lots of money hiring people to have that practice in-house. So I think it's understanding the power of the solution and then being able to then deploy it effectively. And sometimes you got to pay a little bit of money with experts to make that happen.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And the car metaphor is a really good one because we were having a conversation the other day back in the early days when I first got a car. It would be pretty easy to whip off the wheels and change the shoes on the brakes. So they were drum brakes in those days. It would be pretty easy actually to open the bonnet and clean the points for those people that are Gen Z. The points used to be the things that got dirty very quickly on the distributor. Today, none of that exists. And the carburetor, you could pull the carburetor to bits and clean it out so that the fuel would pump more effectively. Well, none of that stuff exists these days because everything's electronic. You've got electronic fuel injection, you've got electronic ignition and so on. So I mean, the best I do on my car now is open the bonnet and top up the oil or check the oil and top up the oil and maybe top up the windscreen wiper, right, washer system. But everything else, I sort of look at it and I think that's all just a big box there. No idea what's where. So, yes, I need an expert to figure out if something's going wrong or just to service it.
Right, exactly. And there's no hope of fixing it.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so let's talk a little bit about advertising campaign. What are some of the considerations that people should or businesses should consider when they're thinking about launching an advertising campaign?
Yeah, I'll give you kind of like more tactical things and I'll give you larger kind of broad stroke things that are like foundational elements. More tactical things, I have the stats for the U.S., 45% of all digital ad spending is going to go to Google and Meta in 2024. Chances are you should be on Google and Meta when you're advertising.
Yeah.
Even if you're a very niche B2B company, your audience is probably spending their time on Facebook and Instagram connecting with their aunt or posting photos of their kid or whatever the case is. Right. So they're going to be there. They have personal lives. The second thing to consider is that if you have a product or service that people can easily search for, chances are you should be running ads on Google, right? Flower shop near me. If you're a flower shop, you should come up as a paid listing on that service, on that search. if, you know, TikTok has an abundance of users that are under 35, but note that, you know, TikTok has, again, US numbers, 170 million users on the app. So chances are most people of most categories are on the app. So there, really the question is, and you're kind of like moving into the space of sort of foundational truths about advertising, creative always wins. Creative is going to be the thing that consumers see that either compels them to take action or is bland and boring and the user swipes. So focus on the creative. Tell a story that's interesting. And storytelling is tough for a lot of people to understand, but it's really this idea that even within one ad, you can make something interesting or utilitarian or engaging in some way and interesting in some way such that it resonates with the person who sees the ad. So you can tell a story in an ad. You can also tell a story across many different ads. Like, here in Los Angeles, there's a town called Palm Springs. It's in the desert. It's like 2 miles away. And on the way to Palm Springs, as you get closer, you'll see billboards for the same business. And the billboard changes and almost talks to you as you're driving down the road. Mm-hmm. So that's a really cool method of storytelling with ads. Foundational truths about advertising are that the most targeted way to reach audiences is with advertising. There's no other way to do it more effectively. And by definition, advertising is when you're paying a platform or publisher to deliver a message. If you're not paying Facebook or Google or Hulu or your local news site to deliver your message, then it's not advertising. So the crux is there, you have to pay for it. If you're posting on social media, that's social content posting. If you're getting press hits in Forbes and Entrepreneur and you're manufacturing trade publication, that's PR or press, that's not advertising. So really all these elements that I just listed and many more will all go together and build an orchestra that creates the symphony of sales for your business. And even if you're just focusing on the advertising components, all the different channels that you're running, the different targeting tactics, the different types of creative executions you're running, your optimizations, all those elements collectively form the orchestra that creates the symphony of sales. The reason I say that is because it's really important not to think about Facebook competing with Google, for example, because Facebook has one specific role in a campaign and Google has a different role to do different things. It's sort of like you wouldn't isolate just the one violinist out of 37 and expect him to create the same sound as 37 violinists and a bunch of other instruments creating the symphony. It's a different thing. They work better together than they do separately. The other sort of fundamental component of advertising, which has existed for the last 100 years, is the idea of a strategy. And your strategy is a navigation plan that tells you where you want to go tomorrow and how you're going to get there starting today. So for a business, your key performance indicator, what are you trying to achieve? Do you want more sales? You want higher order value? You want more headcount? Do you want political power? All those things are, and I'm sure others, all those things are valid goals to have for a business. You need to work backwards to understand how you're going to achieve that. In order to make the decision about the steps you need to take, you need to consider the customer's transformative value. Why does a customer buy your product or service? Like, how are you going to make their lives better? What are the key characteristics of your customer? How do you know when you're talking to them in person or online? How do you know that they're a person that could buy from you? What are the characteristics? You're also looking at customer acquisition cost and lifetime value so that you can understand the economics of your business. You pull all that information together and then you hand it over to an expert marketing or media buying business. And we can tell you, well, to achieve your goals based on understanding who your audience is, understanding the past marketing efforts that work, we recommend, you know, making up Meta ads, Google ads, Hulu, and LinkedIn, and some trade publications. And then that plan gets turned into an action plan where we have, you know, a series of things. We're going to develop the ads. We're going to place the pixels so we can do the tracking. And then the ads launch. And then we're constantly looking for performance opportunities. How do we improve the sale? By the way, a big one that I didn't mention is that you cannot pay your bills with likes, comments, and shares. I'm sure everyone knows that. But yet far too many businesses are optimizing to things other than sales and leads. View count, comments, likes, shares. Cool, you got 300 likes on a post. You can't do anything with that. So there has to be a strategy, and it's really important to ensure that we're basing our strategy around achieving a business goal, not a vanity goal.
Yeah, that's a really important point. And one of the questions I did have, even before you touched on that, was you have this symphony, as you described it, of advertising. You've got the strategy in place. You've got all the tracking systems in place so that you can optimize the performance as you get more data in. One of the key things to me, and I'm always surprised that this doesn't get considered, is, okay, there's a very creative advertisement. First of all, what is the action that you're getting the person to take? And then what's the follow-up from that? Because I've seen over and over again people spending a lot of money on advertising on Google, on Facebook, with very high ticket items. So in principle, there's the budget there to run relatively expensive advertising campaigns or invest a lot in advertising. But what they're doing is placing an ad in front of people saying, hey, here's my high ticket item. Call to action is buy the item or sign up now and start paying the subscription, which to me is very hit and miss. I mean, unless somebody's looking for exactly that thing and they're in a position right now to pay, most people that see that are not going to take that action. So can you comment on what best practice is in, you know, the next step after you've got the advertising up and running?
Yeah, so knowing the purchase timeline or the consumer journey is going to be very important here. So if it takes you 18 months from initial communication to sale, then you know that advertising is going to be one small component of the overall marketing mix to get people to buy stuff. You need ongoing email outreach. You're going to need to text them, call them, have sales conversations, invite them to things. So if your sales process is 18 months, an ad could be good as a reminding component to ensure that you stay top of mind for the brand until they're ready to buy. But it's one of like five different things that you're doing, including like going out for lunches and dinners and throwing events. So understanding what you're doing there is going to be valuable. So for our sales process, you know, our sales process can be, we've had from ad to launch of campaign, 4 days. It's happened a few times. It also goes from first ad to conversation to purchase, a year and a half, 18 months. So you see an ad, people come into the pipeline, they want to have a conversation with us. They like, first of all, we pass the test. Do they like, do they think we'll be a good partner for them? And then the question is, they may not have something to work with us on right now. Because we're a lot of our clients are agencies and we do outsourced ad buying for agencies. We go to market together. So they may not have the ability to work with us right now. So our job is reach out every 3 months, send email marketing. They'll continue to see our remarketing ads. So I think it's really important to, number one, have a sales process. There's too many times when we run advertising for high ticket items and there is no cohesive sales process. Right? Like when a lead comes in, you got to make a call like in the first 24 hours, if not the first 1 hour. Right? Like that lead process is important there.
Yeah. So that's all part of the symphony, isn't it? What's the sales process? Understanding the customer journey and the advertisement particularly for those longer customer journeys, like the 1.5 year cycle time to a sale, the call to action on the advertisement should be the first step in that customer journey, not
buy the thing. I mean, it's unlikely that you're going to spend, you're going to click on buy now and buy a $5,000 item. It's weird, unless, you know, I guess it's possible if you're an e-commerce, if you're B2B e-commerce, and it's something that people routinely buy. But even then, you have vendor agreements, you have supply chain conversations. It starts to become really expensive. You can do that with e-commerce, a few hundred dollars. Hmm. You know, I've bought things for a few hundred dollars off of an ad. But even that takes time. Like, you see an ad, you're like, oh, I kind of want that. But let me talk to my wife before I make a big purchase because, you know, I'm a responsible human being.
Well, let me see what else is available. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is where the search engine optimization comes in, right? Because I've seen this ad. What else is around there? Because I've never heard about these people. So you do a search on Google, and then, you know, if they pop up high, then that's another contact point that kind of gives me a little bit more confidence that, okay, they seem genuine.
And your search advertising also does better, which goes back to the channels creating a symphony, right? Like, Hulu ads are going to create demand. Facebook ads might convert someone or usher them further down the purchase path. And then they go to Google, they search for you, your ad comes up, they purchase. So all of a sudden, it looks like your Google search ad or your SEO is doing really well. Meanwhile, it's actually powered by Hulu and Facebook.
Yeah, really good point. All right, well, one of the things I'm curious about, I mean, we talked a little bit about a lot of the changes that have been happening, but certainly in the last year and a half, I guess, we've got the advent of AI through things like ChatGPT and now Bard growing dramatically, or Gemini, whatever Google's calling it now. How do you see those technologies or the whole AI space impacting the advertising arena and marketing arena, and are there any trends or applications you're particularly excited by?
I'll give you the broad 10,000 foot view. Sam Altman, the key name associated with OpenAI, has a private WhatsApp group where they're taking bets with other, you know, really smart, talented people. They're taking bets on when the first business will be created that's, you know, $1 billion business, has one employee, and is built off of AI.
Hmm.
That should be inspiration for anyone who's trying to do something big.
Yeah.
Whatever you're trying to accomplish, there is someone out there trying to do it with 100% AI and plus themselves.
Hmm.
So that applies for every business under the sun. So now the question is, how are we going to deploy it, and how are you going to deploy it in a way that's going to be effective? What we're doing in our business is we've created, within a month of ChatGPT opening up chat agents. Sorry, I have a sneeze coming. Within a month of ChatGPT opening up chat agents, we built a copywriting agent, which does a few things. Number one, it helps us understand how a business currently talks about itself by scraping the advertiser's website. It understands the key copywriting frameworks and the key individuals who have driven like successful copyright campaigns throughout the decades. And it understands the ad specifications for Google, Facebook, and some other platforms. And so what we do with this ad agent, ChatGPT agent, is we use it to write copy for our advertising campaigns faster, more effective, with higher click-through rates. The benefit for the business case is we get to offer our clients lower cost copywriting services, and we get to keep more of the revenue. And because all these ad buying platforms require a ton of ad creatives routinely, we get to pump out more high quality ad creative that can be tested across the different algorithms.
Hmm. Yeah, those custom GPTs are just magical. And if you understand how to use them, and it comes back again to what we were talking about earlier, experts. I think the whole concept of the AI space, and particularly the language models like ChatGPT, is understanding enough about them to be able to use them to the level that perhaps today people are commonly using Google search.
Right.
But then getting to the point of writing your own custom GPTs, that's where, I mean, I see some magic happening in that. It's really exciting.
A lot of opportunity there. And I think everyone listening to this should be a tech tinkerer, be on Claude, on ChatGPT, on Gemini, and, you know, Midjourney, and really using them to figure out how they can accelerate the way they work and the way they play. I mean, I go to ChatGPT sometimes at night and I ask it, tell me jokes that a five-year-old would like. And then I tell my five-year-old jokes.
Yeah. And how does it do with that?
It's good. The kid laughs.
Yeah.
And I laugh too.
That's good. Yeah, so unique application. I'm reminded our cat, who's no longer with us, but we had to give it a bath one day, and this was like very early after ChatGPT had launched, and so. Yeah, the context. So there's a German poet who I'm a huge fan of. His name's Eugen Roth. So if those people who are familiar with German poetry, you'll know he's kind of a humorist poet, or he was. He's no longer with us. And I'm a huge fan, and I've got books at home. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to write a poem in that style about bathing the cat? Because as bathing a cat, you can imagine there's a quite a big ordeal for both the cat and the person doing the bathing. And so I put into ChatGPT, write me a poem about my cat. I gave it the cat's name. I gave it some of the things that happened during the bathing. And I said, write me a poet in Eugen Roth's style. And I asked it in German. And I asked ChatGPT in German, and I wanted it written in German. And this came back. And without, just with the one prompt, without even going sort of to refinement, I thought, this is just amazing.
It is. It's so remarkable how magical. It's magic. Like,
yeah.
You know, you go back in time, you'd be like, yeah, you're going to talk to the robot. How does it work? I have no idea. I just know you can talk to the computer screen.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, coming back to the advertising part, there's clearly some great applications there, particularly building out those custom GPTs. Also, talk to me a little bit about how you use it for data, because you mentioned earlier about the importance of optimizing advertising campaigns based on what we see happening, click-through rates and hits and so on. How do you use the ChatGPT or the language models in analyzing data? Because you collect huge amounts of data, and that's one of the huge benefits of those GPTs is analyzing large amounts of data.
So I saw this great tool for Amazon sellers, where it would ingest the data, all the data from your Amazon account, and tell you can query it with questions like, hey, which product sold the most last week? And it'll just, in natural language, answer the question, and also give you a table that's relevant there. I think that type of thing can happen because Amazon is very supportive of third-party developers. We're looking at that for like, so Salesforce has a tool called Einstein, which is also a way to give you insights about campaign performance. And so we're very picky about where we put our data because it's important, proprietary. So we're actually a lot slower to that game than I think with other types of information, because it's such an important part of the business. We still rely on like really smart, dedicated individuals to kind of make the most of that, of their campaigns. But we're edging towards that slowly.
All right. Well, this is fantastic, Robert. I could talk marketing in particular a lot longer and digging into the impact of the AI developments recently, but I'm just cognizant of the time. So I think it's a good point now to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. It's the same five questions I ask of every guest. And the idea is you give us some insightful, short, sharp answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
I'm getting ready here.
Yeah. What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Be a tech tinkerer.
Be a tech tinkerer, yeah. Well, we just mentioned that and play around. Actually, one of the great things about ChatGPT is you can actually ask it, say, what should I want to learn more about this, or I want to test out this, what should I do, how should I approach it? And it'll actually give you sort of a step-by-step outline of how you tinker.
Legit.
Yeah. All right, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Oh, man, tech tinkerer. Like, whenever new tech comes out, I'm playing around with it. You know, there's way too much tech to really play around with everything, but, like, I've been a big interested user in Midjourney. Like, I stopped using it for 3 months. I just didn't have a need for it for 3 months. And when I came back to it, it was dramatically noticeably better just in the three-month period. So, like, jump in anytime and play around with these tools.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I find that from a lot of times as well where I look at something in the early days, I think, oh, it doesn't quite do what I'd love it to do, or I don't have a need right now, and then there's a reason to revisit it 3 months later or so, and you, wow, this is really developed.
You know, one of the coolest things is on ChatGPT, there's a voice assistant. You can literally have a full-on conversation with the AI in natural language. And it, like, I demonstrated it for my friend when I was over at his place the other day, and he was blown away.
Yeah.
And he gave him some good ideas too.
Yeah. Wonderful. All right. What's a favorite resource you use most often?
I use Descript. There's two tools. One of them is Descript, which is a video editing tool. Another one I use a lot is called reshareVideo.com, which is a way to push content out to multiple platforms in a really easy way. Mm-hmm. So the practice there is you post to TikTok, and then you can post that one video from TikTok to YouTube, to LinkedIn, to Facebook, to Instagram. So reshareVideo.com.
Okay. I'm not familiar. I'm a user of Descript, but I'm not familiar with Reshare, so I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah.
All right. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
SOPs, standard operating procedures, and clear, concise communication while ensuring you set expectations.
Hmm. Yes, I love that. So expectations up front, I'm guessing, as well as throughout the journey. And standard operating procedures. I'm a huge fan of having standard operating procedures. Another thing that ChatGPT is really good at, say, this is the way I do things. Can you write me out an operating procedure? And it does.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. So I've done that for people as well. All right, and final question of the buzz round. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Iterate. Work hard and iterate.
Hmm.
It's actually three things. Start, work hard, and iterate.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people are scared to start. and like a year later, they're still at the same place. They just thought about it a lot. But if you start, and then you do a bunch of work, and then you constantly improve or iterate, that's going to be a big improvement, right? You if you compound 1% improvement every single day, you're 37 times better at your craft at the end of a year.
Hmm.
So just start, figure it out, work hard, improve, iterate.
Yeah, that's great. Great advice. And I'm a huge fan of James Clear, Atomic Habits, which is that very philosophy is kind of start and keep improving. What's the first step you can do? Which helps beat procrastination. I think it kind of makes things much less overwhelming, because rather than this is what I've got to do, this big thing that I've got to do, you say, well, okay, that's the first step. And once I've done that, that's the next step. And yeah, 6 months down the track, you've accomplished most of that big chunk.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks, Robert. Thanks for getting us through the buzz. This has been a fabulous conversation. Now, where can people find out more about you, about Brill Media, about the work you're doing, and maybe even get in touch and say thanks for what you've shared?
Yeah, so our website is brillmedia.co, B as in boy, R-I-L-L, media.co. Click the Start Now button. You can have a conversation with me to talk about your marketing strategy. And for anyone out there listening that wants to like get into the marketing or agency business, we have a course that teaches you how to be an agency without having to do any of the work. So you outsource everything. That's us.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll have links to those in the show notes, of course. Finally, as we wrap it up, what action would you like our listener to take out of our conversation today, Robert?
There's a few. Hire experts. Save your time and save your money in the long term by expending a little bit of money now. You'll save thousands of hours and tens of thousands of dollars by doing it right the first time. Be a tech tinkerer. Play with new stuff as it comes out and focus on iteration. Like iteration is going to be the key to success. Like you don't have to get it all right now. You just got to work hard and iterate into improvement.
Yeah, I love it. And love the way you've wrapped up some of the advice you gave in our buzz round and made it very clear as an action call. Thanks again, Robert. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. All the best for the future and please do stay in touch.
Thanks, Jorgen.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/flywheel and secure your membership to the exclusive Flywheel Nation community, where you'll enjoy direct access to our incredible podcast guests, engaging meaningful conversations, and participate in connection events designed to elevate your business journey. Don't miss out. Join Flywheel Nation today. Tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jorgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.